welcome to another edition of the Friar Phil Show. I know it's been a little bit of time in between the two shows, but one guest got the flu, not the COVID, but the flu. Another one had scheduling problems, so here we are. And we are now, for the Padres, they're 75-78, which isn't too bad. They're creeping slowly up to 500, but they've got 7 games in a row that they've won as well. And the team seems happier, lighter, and playing like a team. And we'll talk about that with my guest today and a bunch of other things he wants to talk about that he has on his mind. But I'm going to tell you a little something about what I talked about last time and how many people boo-hooed me and told me, you know, hey, you don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. Well, I'm not. E.T. is on the line with me. Hi, E.T.
Hey, Friar Phil. How you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Not bad. If everything works for me now.
Yeah, speaking of COVID, I got over COVID 2 weeks ago, but I'm doing much better, and everything's back to normal again.
Okay, yeah, you sound good. You sound good. Unbelievable. Funny what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Padres, if you'd have told me at this time and we were all excited right where FanFest was back in back then, you know, we did not, no one expected through 153 games that they'd be 75-78. And, you know, you just, you know, seasons happen like this. And there's really, you know, it's tough to describe how much excitement this was. Going into the season, coming off the NLCS, you know, getting Bogarts, getting pretty much everybody back, you know, especially with Tatis. And, you know, here we are, 75-78, and, you know, the chances to make the playoffs are 0.1%. So,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but, you know, it's it happens in baseball. It's unfortunate. I mean, I know you wanted me to come on about a month ago or so, but I was so upset at this team that I didn't even want to talk about the Padres.
A lot of people were, you know, and you couldn't blame them because, well, they just weren't playing as a team. They were going up there swinging for the fences, trying to get home runs and be the big hero. Just a whole myriad of things that just weren't right with this team. And
yeah.
On the last podcast, I mentioned that I noticed a change in the team and the way they played and their record and everything when the sombrero and the piñata parties were taken away because people saying, well, look, they're too happy when they're losing and everything. So they stopped doing, I don't know who told them to stop. Because every other team in Major League Baseball has some kind of activity they do in the dugout that involves the whole team. I don't know who told them to put the sombrero away and not, you know, advertise piñata parties and stuff. But as soon as that was taken away, their affect and their demeanor changed as well. And little by slowly, things changed with that team. And a lot of people last week were saying to me, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, it had nothing to do with that. But it did. Because it took the fun out of the dugout. And in fact, I was just reading something yesterday about the Dodgers and the change in the Dodgers team. And one of the main things the person said has helped the Dodgers this season is making the dugout fun again. And the dugout was fun when they had the sombrero. I thought it was a very unique idea, being, you know, close to Mexico as we can be. You know, we can smell the water over there from here, from my house. and you know, I just thought it was a great idea, and it got the whole team involved. You know, when they're taking the pictures, that only gets a couple of people involved. But with the sombrero and the home run celebration, that got everybody involved, that their team. You know, they'd win the game, they'd go in there and let the guy that hit the most break the pinata and dance around and sing and be happy and be a team and, like a family, blend together. When all that stopped...
Yeah, I mean, some certain teams do things at work. But I think there's a lot of issues besides just the piñata, you know, the celebration.
They
kept it going, I think it was really good. I mean, but I think, you know, something lies within this team, that the cohesiveness, there was something in it that it just didn't pan out. And I don't know what to explain about it. It's kind of strange. This is probably one of the strangest teams that you'll ever played this game. I mean, when you have a run differential that was ranked fourth in the National League all season, they, you know, that projected wins, they should be, you know, way over 500 right now. I mean, beginning of the season, they were the worst with runners in scoring position since the 69 Padres. I mean, it's just kind of, this is such a bizarre season, it's hard to explain. I mean, you know, you have a series of injuries. You get, you know, you see Blake Snell struggling earlier in the season. You bring in Gary Sanchez, and he starts lighting it up toward a Cy Young. You see, you know, guys like, you know, Jake Cronenworth struggling. You see Austin Nola, who was expected, struggling, probably because he had that spring training incident where he got hit in the face. And then you bring in guys like, you know, Carpenter and Cruz, and then Carpenter, who just, you know, they don't play him because he hasn't been hitting. And then, you know, you bring in Cruz, you bring in Odor, who I guess those two were kind of part of the crew.
Yeah.
So they were part of the crew that, you know, that celebrated that pinata thing. And
right,
they all had a good time. But when those two left, I mean, it kind of, you know, maybe it affected the clubhouse more. And then, you know, there's just certain things in this team, you know, and Tim Hill was ineffective. You know, you guys had to bring in, you know, Musgrove is hurt, you know, and Darvish hurt. You know, Nick Martinez is not the same pitcher that he was last year. And, you know, and then Garcia struggles. It's just, you know, it's hard to explain, but it's also, you know, when you're the worst team in baseball in one-run games, and you haven't won an extra inning game, that's pretty much the difference in what's wrong with this Padre team. Is when it comes to, they can beat you, but then, you know, how do you explain losing 5 out of 6 to the Pittsburgh Pirates?
Right.
Losing 2 out of 3 to KC, or it's just, this is a strange season that I, you know, I have never really experienced. But, you know, what this team kind of reminds me of a lot, when the 1989 Padres and the 1996 Padres were coming off good seasons. And in 1989, they were, you know, they were basically 89-73, but they finished 3 games behind the first-place Giants, who eventually went to the World Series. And then the Padres in 1990 came in, you know, they brought in Joe Carter, and everybody's excited. You had Bruce Hurst, you had all these guys that you're ready to make a serious run, and then they finished 75-87. So that's, you know, that's a Bochy. That was a Bochy. You know, it's not a Bochy, but it was a team that was expected to contend. And then in '96 they went to the National Division Series where they. They took 3 in a row in LA to win the West, and they finished 91-71 in '96. But in '97, they finished 76-86. So, and they pretty much had the same team. You know, they had Greg Vaughn coming back. They had you know, Tony Gwynn, all these the players that made 96 successful. But then they underachieved there. So this is kind of a weird cycle coming off a National League Championship Series, and then they just don't show up. And, you know, the 97 team had a rash of injuries as well. So, you know, Caminiti, Finley, those guys were just kind of struggling and scuffling there too. But, you know, this has got to be a big decision coming up in the off season. That's why I'm pretty anxious to see what, if for one thing, if Preller is back as GM, which I think he will, you know, knowing that he's signed through 2025. I mean, there's a bunch of decisions that need to be made definitely in the off season. I mean, are they going to make trades? Are they going to stand pat? That is something that has to be decided, especially come the winter.
Yeah. Now, Fernando gave an explanation yesterday that, it wasn't yesterday. It was on the 20th. Was yesterday the 20th? I don't even know what day it is. Yeah, okay, yesterday. He gave a bit of an explanation as to what's happened. I don't know if you heard it, but I'm going to play it right now real quick. It's just 30 seconds.
I feel like, you know, at the beginning of the year, all the expectation and knowing all the group that we were, you know, all the good players and, you know, just the hype, people were excited. And, you know, coming in as a group together, I feel like we put a little bit of pressure on ourselves too much, you know, trying to make it happen instead of just, you know, let it come to us and play as a good group of baseball. And, feel like we learned our lesson. Yeah.
And he feels like they learned their lesson. So now we'll see if they learn their lesson or not by what they do with the St. Louis Cardinals coming up tomorrow, who are 67-85, a team on paper that the Padres should be able to beat.
Yeah, well, you know, it's they're for one, they're playing good baseball. Two, they're pretty much teeing off on really bad teams. I mean, granted, they took 2 out of 3 in L.A., but, you know, when you're playing Oakland, you're playing Colorado, and now you're coming up against St. Louis, you got to beat these teams. There's no room for error if they still have aspirations to try to make the playoffs, which, you know, they should have started sooner. But,
yeah.
You know, it's you got to finish. I mean, it's good to see that they haven't quit. They haven't, earlier in the last couple months, it looked like they just were done. But I think, you know, come here into September, from the last few games of the season, they're kind of, that swag is coming back. They're more confident, and you know, if you think about it too, it's kind of, you know, the guys that are producing, the Batten, you know, Matt Batten, Eggy Rosario, and Luis Camposano, I mean, they're going in and they're contributing. I mean, with all the injuries to Crow, to Machado, who's still playing with a bum elbow, and, you know, Bogaerts is still playing well. You know, he's playing well with a busted elbow too. You know, and Tatis is, you know, he's been streaky. You know, he's just, you know, still coming back from his surgery earlier this year, and Soto pretty much producing. It's kind of like, you know, some guys are starting to step up, and, you know, you got to win these games, and if they still have aspirations. But it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's, yeah, to me it's going to be a little bit, you know, too little too late, but, you know, finishing strong to end the season, to kind of see, you know, maybe they have a chance, but maybe not. But at least finish the season strong and maybe, you know, push it towards spring training to see how it goes.
It doesn't seem like they're really concerned with going to the playoffs right now. They're just concerned with playing the individual games and winning the games, which is a good approach, in my opinion, you know. Worry about one game at a time, you know.
Yeah, I think they pressed so much this season, to be honest with you. I think they, you know, the expectations were high. They expected to win. They pretty much said, you know what, we'll fix it. We'll fix it down the line, but I don't know. They, to me, they look completely unprepared. especially in the hitting side. I mean, throughout the season, I was wondering what, you know, I know they hired Scott Coolball and as their hitting coach, and then Flaherty was their offensive coordinator slash hitting coach. And, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what their approach was, but the approach has still been the same, you know, ever since we've been talking, you know, for a long time now, since practically, 2019, 2020, you and I were talking about,
right, yeah.
You know, the approach of, they are still a home run, you know, go for the bomb type swinging baseball team. They don't put the ball in play as much. They don't work for contact. They just kind of, you know, they're home run happy. And the approach is still there. You know, when Fran Mill and Hunter Renfro were still there, yeah, they were just like, okay, you're down 3-0. Always swing for the 3-run bomb with runners in first and second, rather than let's put the ball in play, let's get a hit, let's work, let's kind of see, you know, situational hitting, what's going on here. We've been talking about this for years now. And the team is just like, you know, how many strikes right down the middle do you see, either on a 0-2 pitch or, like, what are you looking at?
Swing.
Yeah, swing. It's right down the center. Or, swing defensively or something. Keep the count moving. Keep it going. Save yourself. How many times do you see Trent Grisham look at strike three when it's when it's 3-2 and he looks at a strike three and like, what are you doing? Just swing or just, play defensively, tap it, foul. I don't know. What are you going to do?
Do something. So, just don't
do
stand
something.
There looking at it and then make a face
exactly.
When you strike out. I mean, he's a mystery. He's, I'm not sure what they're going to do about center field because he's such a great center fielder defensively. But then, they got other people that can hit the ball like Sugar, that can play the center field. I don't know if they're going to go shopping for another center fielder and just trade Grisham or what they're going to do, but that's like one of the major decisions I think they need to make, too, because he's just like an easy out.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically the Austin Hedgins of center field.
Yes.
I mean, he can hit 180, 200, but his defense is phenomenal. He gets a good jump on the ball. He can see the ball well. Makes great diving catches, can throw guys out. He's very smart in the outfield. But when you hit like a pitcher back then, and you can't swing the bat, that costs you runs, even though you save them. But, there's always rumors that, Tatis would like to try his chance at center field. Well, I kind of like that idea, but I don't because he's been very solid, a Gold Glove right fielder.
Yeah,
and when
and
a guy
he's
when
used
you
to
switch
that,
another, you know, switching switch him to a different position after he pretty much established himself as one of the best right fielders in baseball this year, it's kind of like, you're gonna. He may not get a good jump on the ball, may not read it as well, but who knows what they're gonna do? That's a big, like you said, a big decision that either Preller has to make or another GM will have to make come the winter time, because that's a big fix, especially if Trent Grisham's bat still hasn't really been the what's been expected of him.
Man, he's still batting like 123 or something. That's not going to work. And they have to do something about the pitching and make some decisions about the pitching as well. Are they going to give a contract to Snell?
Yeah.
Are they going to try and keep him, or are they going to go for some other alternatives and just cross your fingers and hope it'll work out?
Yeah, I mean, Snell's going to generate a Carlos Rodon contract.
Right.
Perhaps, I think it was like a 6 years, 185. I mean, can the Padres sign Snell to a $185 to $200 million contract for a 30-year-old pitcher? It's kind of tough to make that call. I mean, Snell's pitched great. I know it's a contract year. I'd love to have him back, but the business side of it doesn't doesn't really bode well for the Padres, considering they got to consider other pitchers too. I mean, you still have Lugo, I guess, is on. Seth Lugo is on a buyout or option. You've got Michael Wacha is on a buyout and option. Nick Martinez is on an buyout, but he hasn't been pitching well, so that's, they're probably not going to re-up that contract, but. There's a lot of holes in the offseason. You know, you got in the offseason, especially in the starting pitching, because you got Darvish coming back from injury. He's out for the season. You've got Musgrove, who I think he'll be back healthy next year as well. But then with Snell gone, I mean, who's going to be the three? Is it going to be? Are you going to, who are you bringing back? I mean, or are you going to rely on a Matt Waldron? Or are you going to rely on a Pedro Avila? What are you going to do? Because are you bringing up 19-year-old Robbie Snelling? He's a minor league pitcher of the year. I mean,
well, he is
Snelling. Are you going to bring up Jake Vroom? I mean, who are you going to bring up? Or who are you going to, who's going to rely on? I mean, that's the thing. That's the huge hole that... that Preller has to make a decision on, especially starting pitching, because already the bullpen hasn't been, you've kind of got an idea what the bullpen looks like, but with Hader leaving too, possible leaving because of free agency as well, the pitching looks pretty grim at this point going into the wintertime.
And again, if they're going to want to contend next year for 2024, they need to get that all together by the winter and not wait until the last minute to make decisions. I know that Blake wants to stay in San Diego there. He's mentioned that on a number of occasions during interviews, and even when he's talking to Don and Mudd during the games, he's mentioned it a couple of times that he wants to stay in San Diego. He loves it here and stuff, but... we'll see what his agent does with his contract, And if he convinces him, you should go for the gold and get all this money. But, who knows? Maybe he's a guy that, likes money, but is happy with, what he's getting now, or maybe a little bit more than that now, but it's millions of dollars. What the hell are you going to do with all that money? You can't possibly spend it.
The thing is that there's gonna be a lot of teams that are gonna want him. It's like, he's the pretty much the top free agent pitcher going into the winter out of everybody. So, with Julio Urías and his troubles, he was supposed to be a free agent. Now he's gonna be a free agent, but I don't know with his domestic troubles, violence troubles. Get a contract as big as Snell's, or even be considered. So,
I think he's finished.
So I mean, who's going to want Trevor Bauer back? I don't know about that.
Dodgers can have them, if they like.
I mean, Snell is, either way we see it, Snell is going to get paid. And one thing you also, Padres one need to consider too, is that they got to get younger in the starting pitching. If you look at the age, I'm kind of looking at the ages right now. Snell's going to be 30, 31. Seth Lugo's 33. Darvish is turning 37 next year. Michael Wacha's 31, 32. Musgrove is going to be 31 next year. And so we got a bunch of starting pitchers in their 30s. So we somehow got to get some young talent. I don't know who the talent is next year and who's going to be available, but we're going to have a lot of veterans, but we're going to have to sprinkle some young talent in and see what they got. Is Adrian Morahone going to finally show up? I mean, we've been waiting for that guy for years, but he's got such consistent injury problems. And Reese Kinnear, is he going to?
Well,
on the pitching side as well.
If they bring up Snelling, that might work, to kind of fool people, or you could pretend, just hold your hand up to the TV and get rid of the ING and, oh, look, Snell.
Yeah, I mean, Snelling is, he's 19 years old. That's the thing. You got some kids who are the minor league pitcher of the year. I mean, this kid is good, but, I mean, you can't just pry him and expect him to come in and throw lights out and throw him to the fire. I mean, if they're ready to throw him to the fire, I mean, it's obvious that the moves that the management made to bring up some of these kids from single A to double A to kind of rush them, to kind of bring them up and play them as a, you know, play them together, like the Martorellas and the Grand Paulies and the all those other kids to come together. It's just, they all want to have them play as a team and see if they can gel in double A, and then it'll constitute in the major leagues when they get up. But who knows? It's still a mystery with Preller and all this front office issues.
Drama.
Exactly. This is like a reality show. They need to, put it on HBO or something. It's like, this is, they should make Hard Knocks Baseball, and this is the Padres should be the front runners for that show.
Right.
It would be so much drama that you wouldn't believe what's going on. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, all this stuff that they're talking about with AC's article and all the Athletics article with Dennis Lynn, who knows? We don't know the whole thing, but if all this stuff that we've thought of, I mean, we heard about Preller's issues back since 2021. I mean, that was an article that's pretty much similar to what the article we saw a couple days ago. So it's, Preller has issues. And it reminds me of another AJ that ran the Chargers during the Marty Schottenheimer
yes.
In 2005, 2006, with AJ Smith, who is the general manager of the San Diego Chargers. And him and Marty Schottenheimer didn't see eye to eye. AJ Smith wanted to run things. He wanted to get his hands on the players on who's playing and why should you play this guy and who should we draft. And Marty was like, "No, we should draft this guy. Drew Brees is fine. We don't need to get Phillip Rivers. we just need guys that I want guys that I can. I'm trusting in these guys." And he's like, "No, we need this player. I want this. We need this philosophy. No, we need." It's like, golly, if that's what's happening between AJ Preller and Bob Melvin right now, it's a disaster. But who knows? I mean, they can fix things and do stuff. You never know. This team might actually win make a run next year. But who knows?
I didn't understand people calling for the resignation or the firing of Bomel. It's like, why is it his fault that this team has played the way it has? Number one. Number two, look at his record as a manager.
Yeah.
If he's that much of a loser and can't do things, well, then how come he made us go to the playoffs last year?
Yeah.
How come he had success with Oakland?
Yeah, I mean, everybody questions... going back to last year in the playoffs where, should the hater have faced, that's his name in the playoffs. But, they kept in Suarez and the guy hit a home run. And it's just, it's just, they question a lot. I mean, there are times where I think, Bomel trusts his players maybe a little too much. To try to get a little bit more out of them, to kind of give them a chance to get through an inning, but then again, it's like he maybe leaves them in there too long or something.
Yeah.
But you can't deny if you look at Bomel's record in Oakland, I mean, he's, 853 wins and 764 losses. He had in 2012, he had wins. Check this out. 2012, he had wins at 94, 96, 88. He did have 2 years at 68, 69, 75, but in 2018, he had 97 wins, 36 wins in that shortened 2020 season, and 86 wins, in 2021, and then 89 with the Padres. So it's obvious this dude knows how to manage. And, you know, it's just, the dude can manage. I just think that, I don't know, things just didn't work out this season. He's actually taken teams with much lesser talent to the playoffs. But, you know, sometimes players have, you know, certain egos.
Yes.
And the management, you know, him, you know, trying to manage these guys can be difficult. But then again, we don't know what the relationship with him and Preller is. We don't know how that's affected his management.
Right.
We don't know, if Preller has more involvement in what the lineup is or who he wants to see play, or, you know, if you look at the previous managers and, you know, and Green and Tingler and even Murphy or something, those guys were kind of like yes guys. They weren't proven managers at all. But, you know, coming into 2022, you know, you had American League Manager of the Year come in to try to take over, and maybe the relationship between the two weren't working. But, you know, they somehow went to the National League Championship Series, and it worked. So, I don't know. I don't know what really goes on in this front office. I really don't know. You know, there's a lot of speculation, but there's a lot of probably truth to it, too, when, you know, people are telling that A.J. Preller is a micromanager. He likes his hand in different things. He makes, you know, different decisions behind the door. Everybody doesn't know, players don't know who to listen to. It's either AJ or Bowman. Who knows? But I don't know. If all this stuff is being reported, that, you know, especially that we've known for the last couple of seasons, it I guess it is true.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
It probably is. And I wonder what Peter thinks about it.
I don't know. I mean, Peter Seidler is, he's definitely the best owner that the Padres have ever had in terms of trying to win a championship. But, you know, he loves, apparently, just trusts Preller, you know, to the point that he extended him till 2025. But, you know, it's like he's got to look and see, well, what direction really is my organization going to? I know we're great in the minors. We've brought up international talent. We've brought up, you know, but we've also traded away our talent, you know, and sometimes, getting a bunch of all-stars and veterans together doesn't constitute a championship baseball team or a winning team. There's always, there's certain veterans that come together, and then there's also the complementary players. And that's why, I think what we're seeing now with guys like Batten and Eggy and Campusano, those are the complementary players that are actually helping out the veterans, even though, you know, you got guys that are injured and guys are starting to swing the bat. So you need, the Padres are, you know, veteran heavy, and all-star, you know, pretty much an all-star team with the four tops there, you know, but it's also those complementary players like a Zokar, you know, those guys can come up and make the big play. You know, Ha-Seong Kim, I mean, he's developed into something that, you know, everybody's saying, oh, maybe we should trade Ha-Seong Kim, you know.
No.
You know, he's been great. I mean, I don't know what his injury is right now, but he's been more than we expected. He's just developing. He's continued to get better. I mean, that's the thing about Kim, is that he's continued to get better. He's continuing to swing a hot bat. He's still playing great defense no matter what position he puts. You can put him at third. You can put him at short. You can put him at second. He will make a play for you, and that's the type of players that that the Padres need, is guys that,
yeah, and you want,
you know, they
you
may
want
not
keep
have,
that.
Yeah, you want to keep guys like that, and you want to sign that. But I don't know. I mean,
he should be in Friday's lineup. From what I was reading, from what I heard yesterday, he felt better. I think the problem he had was abdominal mm-hmm. pain. And nobody wants to admit, you know, in the open press, I had gas. Yeah. Gassy stomach. I was farting all over the place. They could smell it all the way up in Hyrule. So that might have been the stomach problem he had, but he was in uniform last night and could have been used as a pinch hitter, so he'll be in the lineup tomorrow. I'm pretty sure he will be. But then again, like you said, you never know. There's so many variables with this team. Just when you think you know something, you're surprised with something else completely different. Yeah. I just want to be surprised with a season where they can play consistently.
Yeah.
The 163 games. Yeah. You know, and people want to, you know, piss and moan when I say something nice about the Dodgers. And, you know, the thing is, the Dodgers do it the right way.
You can't deny what the Dodgers do. They have a system that works. And a system that, you know, that it's, you get a guy like, you know, that just, I mean, how do you explain guys that come into their system who are struggling either behind the plate or at the plate, or even at on the mound or at the plate? Some guys will come in, they'll struggle, bat 220. You put them in a Dodger uniform, they'll hit 250, 260. You put a guy that has a 5 ERA, you put him on the mound, he has an ERA of 2 or 2.3 or something. There's something in that system that a lot of Major League Baseball teams need to piggyback on, because I don't know what it is. I have no idea what their system does. I don't know if they watch video, their analytics team. They do something different that other organizations don't do.
And maybe Dave Roberts is allowed to manage without having anybody micromanage him.
Well, that's true. I think also the coaching staff, the overall coaching staff is I mean, the Mark Pryors somehow, you know, they could, I don't know. I mean, I'm speculating. I guess they look at a pitcher's strengths and then they work on it. They continue to work on it. They don't, you know, they can know what their weaknesses are, and then they kind of see based on, you know, maybe velocity or angle of the arm or whatever. So they analyze what a player does best and just continue to push toward that. So, I mean, how do you explain, like, I guess Haney was a pitcher that they had last year, and, you know, he's struggling now without the Dodgers system. So I don't know. There's guys like that that just, they go into the system, it works, they leave the system, and they're back to their, you know, average Joe.
Yeah, so, who knows? Yeah, maybe some.
Who knows? Maybe the Padres need to, like, pry someone out of there in their front office or something.
Get Julio Gurriel on the offseason. Bring him in. we'll take him if he spills the secrets. You know, let him spill the secrets and then put him down in AAA or something for a little bit. So, you know, he's away from the big show and he can't beat women anymore. But, you know.
Kershaw's a free agent.
Yeah, there you go. See, I've never really had a problem with the Dodger team. You know, the guys on the team. Yeah, I don't like Max Muncy. He gets on my nerves. And for some reason, Freddie Freeman gets on my nerves as well. It's just like
this. He gets on my nerves because he's so dang good.
Yeah, well,
that's one of the reasons why he gets on my nerves. He's so dang good.
But as far as the team goes, I have nothing against the team. You know, I thought I've made it clear over the years, you know, it's the Dodger fans that come to Petco Park that are the snarky, loudmouth, drunk idiots that I can't stand. So if I say, you know, congratulations to the Dodgers for winning the division again, you know, that doesn't mean I'm a Dodger lover. Like some people still say, insist on saying. It just means, you know, I would like it if, you know, people who are Dodgers fans would do the same for the Padres, you know, if we win the division, you know, sometime before I die, and have that same sort of attitude.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, the Dodger-Padre rivalry, if it is even a rivalry to some people, you know, it's until the Padres can win consistently against them, which, you know, taking two out of three is not too bad toward the end of the season. It was nice to see that, but, you know, to actually beat them when it counts, that's the thing. I mean, we did it last year in the playoffs, but you know, coming to the regular season, you know, you get swept, you lose two out of three.
Man.
You go on a losing streak against these guys because they just know how to manufacture runs, and they just have a system that works, and hoping someday the Padres kind of figure that out, you know. But the only way they were to figure it out is if, you know, they have maybe someone in the system who knows it out of that system. But it's just a train that keeps on moving because it works. It's a system that works. It's some, you know, they can scout guys, and you know, they can bring up a guy like Outman and put him in center field. The next thing you know, he starts producing. It's like it's consistent, ridiculously consistent. You know, the guys like a Todd Hollinsworth. You got guys like Corey Seager. You got guys that just come up from the system, and then next thing you know, they're producing, and then you know they just make plays. It's like, come on, where are these guys coming from? But then if you put a guy in the Padres, you're like, well, he's expected to play well.
Maybe. Could be. Let's see, you know.
Let's see. I don't know.
Wait until after the break and see if he hits up. And nah, 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 nah. Baloney.
It's a system.
Yeah, and two big words you used was manufacture runs.
Yeah.
You know, the doing that is probably the biggest part of a baseball game, in my opinion. The home runs, if you get a hold of one, you can smack it out of the yard, go for it.
Yeah.
But the biggest part of, you know, from what I learned when I played, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, you get somebody on base, move them along.
Yeah.
Yeah, only one out or no out, sacrifice. Try and hit one long, you know.
Yeah.
Don't hit into a double play, Grisham.
Yeah, I mean, situational hitting is something the Padres have to work on better, because they got to know, well, if there's a guy on first and second, you know, don't hit it this way, or, you know, you got to move the runners, you got to put the ball in play, you can't just look at strike three, or, you know, you got to know what the situation is. If there's a, you know, sometimes you wonder, you know, what preparation before the game is, if they're studying a certain pitcher. Oh, you know, especially how do you explain when young pitchers from the minors get called up and the Padres go in and the guy just pitches like six innings, three hits, one run.
Oh, yeah, and I've got to look and say, well, Jesus, is this Cy Young reincarnated? All of a sudden it's not some guy from the AAA.
Yeah.
It just amazes me.
Yeah, and even guys that come up who've lost like five in a row with a 5 ERA, and then, you know, they face the Padre lineup this year, and, you know, he pitches 5-6 innings and only allows a run. You're like, how do you not, you know, beat guys like that? Or, you know, it just makes no sense. So, you know, to me, that indicated to me that, you know, preparation is something the Padres lacked this year, especially in the hitting, where they either didn't recognize what the pitcher was throwing, they were guessing at the plate, they weren't knowing what the pitcher's repertoire was, they just kind of think guessing, okay, this guy's going to throw a slider, oh, it's a fastball, or not even know the, you know, like you said, knowing the pitcher's, selection or repertoire or something. So they need to prepare better, and I think that's what they should have done this year, and I think that was a big contributor. Their lacking of preparation and inability to recognize pitches and inability to study pitchers, even though pitchers that they haven't seen before, you know, that contributed to their lack of runners in scoring position and their average there and their ability to manufacture and score runs and even put balls in play, you know, because they are a home run heavy team. So, you know, something's got to give. I mean, I don't know what Preller sees in Ryan Flaherty. Maybe, you know, there's always rumors that he's supposed to take Bomell's place. I don't know. I guess some teams wanted to interview Flaherty in the offseason, and Preller said no. I don't know what they see in him. I know him and Manny Machado, I believe, were teammates back in the day. So I don't know what trust they have in this Ryan Flaherty, but you know, he was put in as the offensive coordinator, and this offense, these bats just don't seem to have clicked all, you know, season, and I don't know, something's up there. So
there are,
we'll see what happens next year.
There are so many variables that have to be fixed. You know, we just touched the surface. You know, in 45 minutes, we just touched the surface.
Yeah,
of what some of the stuff is.
We can go on for another hour and talk about what's going on with this team.
And I really, you know, part of me thinks, well, okay, maybe 2024 will be a better year. Maybe they'll iron this all out. But then there's another part of me that thinks, I don't know if we'll be able to get it all done and fixed by opening day 2024. And it really depends what they do during the winter meetings and beyond, you know, before the season opens up. And I guess we can't do anything but wait and see. Because
yeah,
none of us have
much.
Any real control over you know, what is going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends. I mean, you have the off season is going to be huge next season because, you know, you could either be a team like Cincinnati who, you know, struggled last year and now are, you know, are on the verge of making the playoffs. You even have, you know, Texas is another one. In the cat's meowing.
Oh yeah, and Nikki's awake, so she wanted
like
to say, put her two cents
Chicago's
in.
Chicago's actually in the middle of a playoff race. So teams can win next year. Everything changes year by year, and you know, it just depends on what happens in the off season, how the team is built, and, you know, how do you explain the Mets going from 100 wins to now 71 right now? So it's things like that, and Padres too, from going from 89 to 75 right now. So
right.
Seasons can change, and teams can start winning, and you know, but the consistency is what we're looking for, and you know what we were hoping for, especially with this team, knowing who came in and who was coming back and how they performed last year. The expectation was so high. You know, we were so ready for this season, but, you know, like I said, in 1990 and 1997, the same thing happened. So, I don't know, you know, it's things like this happen. We could have, you know, we could blame Bomell, but some players, some fans are going to blame Bomell, but, you know, we played Bochy the same time in that tenure.
Yeah,
so,
we did.
I mean, I'm guilty of wanting to fire Bochy right after, you know, certain seasons, but we've seen Bochy become, you know, World Series champion manager. So, I don't know. Baseball's such a fickle game, but that's why we love it, too. And
I want to be able to sit back and just enjoy the season without having to worry about, you know, what we're going to do in October and if it's going to come into fruition and stuff, you know, worrying about it in May. I just want to enjoy the games, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty much what you could do.
Which I haven't been able to do, by the way.
Oh.
These people that bought season tickets, a lot of them bought up the seats for people with wheelchairs.
Oh.
And there's not a cripple thing wrong with them. I haven't been able to get a seat, you know, to buy a seat that's a wheelchair thing since, May.
Mm.
Absolutely no seats available. They've either been bought up by season ticket holders or people, you know, going online and buying it, and they've got to come up with another system or something because it's not really fair. I can't go out and enjoy a game.
Yeah.
I could go to the park in the park, but I refuse to Gallagher Square, rather. I refuse to pay $35 to go sit on the grass or sit in front of the grass in my wheelchair and watch it on a big TV. I've got friends with big TVs. I can go watch, you know, their house for free.
Yeah.
So that's my little gripe for this season that, you know, something maybe they can fix in the off season, maybe open up more wheelchair accessible seats, you know, don't let somebody have to prove that they're, you know, handicapped.
Yeah, even the spaces up on the top where they park the handicap area.
Yeah.
With the wheelchair. Oh, man. So those were taken up, too?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Couldn't get a goddamn ticket.
Wow.
To save my life. Wow. All gone. And this was looking, you know, at games 2 months ahead, you know? Mm-hmm. I started looking like in July or June for August and September. Games, you know, so I can get my little bobbleheads. Oh, well. Everybody listening is saying, you know, play the violin music now. Cue the violin music. Poor Friar Phil can't take his chair to a game. But, I don't know. I think everybody should have equal opportunity to come to the stadium and enjoy it. And if you can't get a seat, you sure as hell can't enjoy it, you know, unless you sit out on the sidewalk and pretend you're at the game. Listen to Jesse and Tony on the radio and pretend you're there. I don't know. Who knows?
Wow.
Anyhow, thanks for jumping on with me today. Perhaps we'll talk one more time for the end of the season when it ends, actually, and wrap up this year. I don't know if this is going to be the last podcast I'm doing this season or not. It really depends on what happens with the Padres. I think at best what's going to happen is they'll get a few more wins and hopefully they'll get to 500. And if they can get to 500, I'll be happy with that. Or a little above it. Now, I know, wishful thinking, but, you know.
Yeah, wishful thinking. I mean, it's
miracles have happened.
It's all you can ask for is to finish strong, and, you know, the playoffs being 0.1%, it's not about the playoffs. It's about finishing strong and going into the off season and seeing who's coming back and who they're signing. And, you know, it's at this point where, you know, playoffs shouldn't be in, you know, even though you're 4.5 back with 9 to go, it just doesn't make any. It's the chances are very slim, but, you know, it's just enjoy the games. Just enjoy the, you know, figure out what's, let the team keep playing. I mean, you got to also think about, you know, Machado going into surgery next season, you know, and so there's a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of stuff that's going to be, you know, on this Padre team next season. It's going to be players, you know, coming back from surgery, you know, players coming back from injury, you know, who's going to be pitching, who's going to be the starting rotation next year, who's going to be, you know, are they going to bring in another center fielder, is, you know, Camposano going to be the starter next year, are they going to re-sign Sanchez, there's so many things, you know, is Jackson Merrill going to make a trip up, is he going to be in the team next year, what are they going to do with Cronenworth, you know, is he going to come back, is they going to trade him, is like, what are they going to do with Ha-Seon Kim? You know, there's 1 year left in his contract. Are they going to re-sign him? It's just so many things. That's, you know, in the off season, in the next couple years, that, you know, there's more drama that are just waiting for us as Padre fans.
Well, I guess it gives sports talk radio and podcast, you know, something to talk about. So
yeah, I got some, you know, some things to talk about.
Tomorrow we've got Waldron pitching for the Padres. And then Saturday, Nick Martinez, who has become one of my least favorite pitchers for the Padres, along with Garcia, with that stupid beard. I'm like, grow a goddamn mustache with that beard. It looks stupid. And then on Sunday, it looks like we're going to have Waka pitching, so we should be able to win at least 2 out of the 3 games.
Yeah, they should. Against St. Louis, they should.
But we will see. We will see. All right, thanks for being on with me. Good talking to you. It's been a while, so I went longer than I normally go, but that's cool.
Well, thanks for having me on, Friar Phil.
No problem. And okay, yeah, that was a pretty good episode, I think. It usually is when E.T. comes on and gives us his knowledge. Like I said, I don't know if this is going to be the last podcast for the season. It all depends on what happens with the Padres in the coming week. If it looks like we're doing something interesting, I'll get another guest and pop on with you and give you another 45 minutes of the Friar Phil Show. Till then, take care, watch your back, and remember, love each other. It's easier than hate.